The order of this meeting of the Customer Service Committee. Roll call, please.
Committee Chair Director Reddick.
Here.
Director Banks. Director Towns.
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. I will take a motion for approval of the minutes of the Customer Service Committee meeting of May 16, 2012.
So moved.
And I guess I can second it. Second. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, those are passed as submitted. Under additional comments under the chair, we have a couple of contracts that are on this agenda, and when we bring those up, I know that there was some discussion about the timelines associated with that, and there is a system that's associated with those and kind of how it's going to transition, so we'll just hit on that as it goes forward. And I just wanted to make sure, because that question had been raised a couple of times, so just to address that. And I think that's all we have. At this point, I'll turn it over to Christy.
Sure, and I will probably promptly turn it over to Shauna to go through the customer service work plan. We always do a recap of the work plan and kind of plan out, you know, talk about what high points we're getting on this meeting and what we've really accomplished and where we're going. So, and then I think, you know, we do have a call center transition that we're going to be undertaking, and one of the contracts today has to do with that. And, you know, I would like to say a few words after we're done with the work plan on that. But Shauna, do you want to talk a little bit about the work plan?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The work plan is I know that we review it every time that we get together. The violations framework is something that continues to be addressed as we try to determine ways that we could improve our business rules such that customers benefit, but that our revenue is not impacted. So those are items that we will be bringing to you over the course of the year, but it's probably the hardest thing. It's too bad it's the first thing in the block. Now, what we do want to talk about is an update on the fleet policies, and just going back, the fleet policies and the feedback transponders.
Okay.
So fleet policies, we wanted to just kind of remind everybody about what we had heard from the focus groups and the RFI presentations from different vendors, and kind of how we have taken those and put them into our draft RFP, which soon will become the RFP for a new back office system. When we had those focus groups, we had heard that the fleet needed different security rules so that they could do account maintenance. They have offices all over the country, sometimes all over the world, and they have different people call us to update IPAS accounts, but our security policies and even the way security works in the system makes it very difficult for them to have different people call in, because we ask so many different questions, including driver's license number. Yeah, that's for an individual, not for a fleet. So we heard that from the focus groups, and then we had also heard that they really do wish that they had account managers. They did in the past when the IPAS first started, and a lot of them really missed that. With respect to the RFI presentation, we learned that we really do need and should be able to find a system that offers self-service with respect to these IPAS account, fleet IPAS accounts that would allow them to manage their plates. Right now, the only way to really manage your plates online is involves so many clicks of the mouse that a fleet can't possibly do it if they have hundreds or thousands of plates. In the future, the idea would be to have a system where they could upload and download whole plate files that they maintain on their end, probably in Excel, which they already do. Most of them already do that. They have to. But we have no way to really accept those. And then we want to seek a system that allows for different types of correspondence, different rules, a different way to treat fleets. Right now we treat them the same as we do individual customers. So even when they get letters from us about just general changes or any general outreach, it's not really specific to their experiences. And a new system would allow us to differentiate a little bit better, at least for the organizations that identify themselves with a fleet. One thing that will remain a challenge in the industry is If an organization comes to you and they're an IPAS customer and they say, here's our list of plates, we are a fleet, you're typically okay. If they are violating, and they have a bunch of different plates to keep violating, you don't really necessarily know that you're dealing with a fleet. All you see are violating plates. And you can sometimes match up the name, but with subsidiaries and the different way names are recorded and stuff, you can't always do that perfectly. So just to give an idea of how the future system will be a great opportunity for fleets that identify themselves and come to us and say, well, we are IPAS customers, but we will, you know, we will continue to struggle a little bit with piecing together fleets who are just violating.
But in the near term, we are going to try to create a fleet kind of management unit or specialized customer service group.
We are. So we don't need a new system to at least start account management. That is very true. And then we are, of course, putting together an RFP that seeks a new back office that provides for some fleet-specific business rules, including possibly notice escalations, the way fees would get charged, maybe even discounts. These are some things other tolling organizations have experimented a little bit with, and how they would deal with disputes if they're a fleet. And a self-service website that would give them the capacity to have multiple account managers on their own end, to manage their accounts themselves instead of having to call us every 2 seconds, uploading their own play files like we talked about, managing their own transponder status. Transponder inventory is huge for these fleets. They really sometimes struggle to know exactly which truck has which transponder and what the expiration date is and everything like that. And then reassigning violations is something that's specific to rental car fleets, because we do have legislation in Illinois that allows rental car companies to reassign their violations to renters. The way that it's been done at the tollway has been very manual all of these years, and we would like to make it more automated in the future.
Sean, can I just interrupt you on two things there? Number one, the RFP status. I know I'm kind of going off track here and it's a little outside of this, but where are we on the time frame for the
final draft has been pulled together. It needs to be approved by several different internal and state entities. And
okay.
It should.
So the SPO, for instance?
Yes. And they've been brought along all the way along. They've been looking at different versions of it, so we anticipate it to go relatively smoothly.
So
I would assume we could post it in the next month. I would assume. I can't say for sure because procurement is a little bit of an unknown. But
right. And the other thing is, one of the issues that was raised at the strategic planning committee was a discussion of not the idea in some of the tolling industry is to have kind of a variable rate of toll depending on the use. In other words, higher use times higher path, higher
especially
toll.
Especially with volume discounts, right?
Think it's more like you know, kind of the concept of managed lanes, where you would have, are you talking about pricing different
right.
times a day?
Right.
You know, rush hour pricing versus off-peak.
This does anticipate that possibility.
It does include that.
One of the things that we're very eager to do is find a back office system that provides maximum flexibility in the way that we can manage our own business rules. So as different ideas, models, as we implement new things here, we won't struggle quite like we do today to match the back office technology for it.
One thing that I found kind of surprising from the focus groups that I sat in on was, and you know, everything that, you know, the feedback that we got back from them, was, you know, I really went into them thinking that we should be very careful about changing our business rules because customers have become accustomed to them. You know, they become accustomed to how we deal with violations. They become accustomed. But the reality is, they don't necessarily know them. They're complicated. It's challenging for them. And so I think that we have to be less concerned on the customer education front than on just kind of creating something that's a little simpler for everybody to understand, which I know is feedback we've heard from all of you before.
And I think that there's been some, you know, we've had some discussions on that as far as kind of the direction we want to see this go. And I want to make sure that, you know, we kind of go down that road. And I'm not sure that there is a real commitment to, you know, maintaining something just because that's the way it's been, and more of a You know, we've talked about this customer-based approach, and I think that's, you know, we've talked about that as far as a priority, and, you know, I think that's the way this board wants to see this go, so I would echo that. The only other thing that I did want to say is, as we're going forward and we're dealing with the fleet policy, particularly as we're in this process where we're waiting for the RFP so that we have the new back office, you know, Director Darcy was a member of this committee before, and one of his, you know, life experiences, I think, you know, his real life job, I think would be very beneficial. And, you know, just as we go down this road, I'd implore you to bring him into that process so that we can, you know, get that input on the front end.
Yeah, it's a good point. With his dealership experience, he would maybe be able to come at it from more the customer side of it, and the fleets are having a challenging for us. So we'll make a point of sitting down with him or talking to him specifically about it.
Or I can talk about both cars that I have, if that kind of helps.
Managing your personal fleet?
Yes, that is very
Who am I kidding?
Very
My wife
helpful.
Can sit down with you and talk about that. She doesn't let me make any of those decisions.
But that's a great point. And, you know, these fleets from dealerships are indeed the type of organizations that could benefit from the right sorts of decisions up front.
Right.
Without a doubt. The next thing we wanted to cover was an update on feedback transponders, and I am pleased to say we have a little bit of show and tell. It is a sample feedback transponder that has been produced as a prototype by CAPCH, the EasyPass Group vendor. And when I'm going to pass it around here, but when you press this button, that orange light shows that you would have a low balance. Green light shows that you're good to go. It red, you have an okay account. It red, your transponder. The red light means red your transponder, but your account's not good.
Overdrawn.
Right. Overdrawn or expired credit card, whatever it may be.
Right. Well, that's something that we're sure is not your fault, but we're sure you mean to be a
We're sure you mean to be your fault, but we're just letting you know, please check your account. And then if you don't get a beep at all, it means it hasn't been read. Or that it's dead, I mean, it's dead and hasn't been
read. Dead or something.
Yeah, something has gone wrong and you need to contact us so that we can work with you. So, everybody has expressed a great deal of interest in these. They cost, their anticipated cost, about 25% more per transponder than what we pay for our existing transponders. And in our last survey of our customers on this topic, 90% that they were pretty interested in getting this type of technology back. We did have something like it about 10 years ago at this point, and people are very remiss to give it up when it's done, right. When it's dead and time to swap it out, and I understand.
I was one of those.
Oh, you were? You didn't even call me.
Well,
I've had
no special treatment.
But at least to complain.
I mean, Director Towns can get special treatment by then she'd be an inpatient.
I could have at least tried to make you feel better about the fact that we were moving in a new direction. So there are a few things that we probably should understand as a group that will be taking place to make this happen. It's not as easy as just buying them and putting them in cars. If it were, we could start presumably tomorrow. One is that will require us to replace the readers in our lanes. We need to do this anyway. The readers are end of life. We've budgeted to do this. We have scope in our contract with CAPCH to do this, but it does have to be done before these transponders would make any sense, before they would work. CAPCH and the EasyPass Group are actually not done testing this prototype yet. It's in process right now. They expect to be done in the first quarter of 2013, and if all goes well, then we can begin our own testing. Because what we have found is that doing our own testing can make all the difference in the world for that kind of performance or accuracy of the technology. Because when the EasyPass Group does it, they do it for a common denominator. They don't do it for our weather conditions. They don't do it for our level of open road tolling. They just do it for the common denominator of tolling. And we like to do our own testing so that we can bring the best product forward, do our own tuning of the antennas and readers, however we need to make sure accurate. We need to consider as an organization charging a fee to cover the additional cost of the transponder. It's something that other tolling organizations do. There are processes in the back office that would have to be changed to cover that, you know, accepting the money, putting it against an account, all of that stuff, but it's not impossible, and we would need to consider it. There would also be just some inventory considerations for how the stuff would get distributed. Say, right now we distribute a lot of transponders to Juul, but they're all the same transponder. It's very easy. Juul doesn't have to worry about keeping different sets of transponders. We don't have to worry about tracking really different types of transponders that go out to all the different locations. We would in the future scenario.
Well,
unless, of course, we went all feedback.
Well, okay, let's, if we go back just a little bit. You're talking about, in order to utilize these new feedback transponders, we would have to engage in a change in our lane readers that we're going to have to change out just based on the life of the current hardware.
A refresh of the hardware.
So my question is, really long way to get there, do once we make this change, would we have to change out the current non-feedback transponders?
No.
They would be able to work, and this new
would
just simply take both. So we would have the opportunity at without any other change to really maintain this two transponder system.
Yes, and we could charge a premium, if it's a possibility, for the beeping transponder that seems to be in demand.
Well, I think we'd want to look at covering the cost. So it's an increased cost for the actual equipment, but also, you know, there will be some programming and extra things we need to do in the back office to make sure that it integrates with the system correctly. So.
And do we know what that would be? Do we have any ballpark on that cost at this point?
On the back office cost? The per transponder is about 25% more, and we pay a little more than $8 per transponder under our current contract. For the integration piece in the back office, it would depend on the business decisions we would make. The inventory management piece could be big or small, depending on whether or not we wanted to maintain different types of transponders that people could choose from. And the other piece of development we would need to do, although I don't think it would be very costly, it might just be a little bit of time to make sure it worked right, would be trying to get the right information in the system to cover the fee. So there aren't really fields in our IPATH database right now for the type of fee that would have to be charged for this, and then the reporting off of it and stuff like that.
So on a go-forward basis, we need first for them to finish the testing on this product so we can get
the EasyPath group,
and so that we can get so we know what we're dealing with as far as capabilities and costs on that, and then as we put in the new back office system, we would then have to develop a system or the parameters for a system to utilize this, and then backtrack into what our total cost or upcharge would be?
Well, I think we have a couple of options. After the testing, we could look at changing our existing system, programming our existing system to do this in the interim, even though it'd be a little clunky and would take some time. We could probably do the fee in our existing system and the inventory management. We will certainly be able to do it in the new system.
Okay.
But the most important thing in all of that is to make the business decisions that we want to make. You know, if we want to charge a fee, we should decide that when it's time.
Well, so I think that, don't we need the data, though? I think the director's question or the chairman's question is a good one, because it sounds like the next step for us is to analyze,
the cost.
How much more, what do we think, you know, given the kind of blending of what we learned from the customer surveys and how many people are interested in them versus how many, have at least articulated that they would pay something additional for them, and kind of figure out, run some scenarios of what those might be.
And then bring those scenarios to this group to
Work
through. Yeah, point taken. I'm sorry, I kind of went down a different path. But yeah, you're right. I mean, first the analysis, then the business decision, and then kind of the technology changes.
And are we in position to start at least preliminary numbers on that analysis?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. And we're actually going to try to start our own internal testing of these before the EasyPass group finishes their testing. There's no reason we can't overlap a little bit. So we've ordered the equipment and we're going to try to start doing that.
And in our customer survey, the one from 2009, that 90% were interested and 38% were willing to pay for them, was there ever a discussion in that survey as to what that dollar figure was, or was it just the general concept of,
it was the general
I really
concept.
Want it, so they may be willing to pay a quarter?
We can always do new surveys. We actually have a decent response rate for a lot of our surveys, especially when they're iPass customers,
okay.
because they're used to hearing from us. And a lot of them are part of our newsletter database and whatnot.
So maybe we should think about working with communications
and refreshing the
and
survey.
Refreshing the survey, doing another round of survey, because we've had a couple questions that have actually come up in this work, this group, that I think would be valuable probably for you,
okay.
for all of us to have some feedback as we make some of these decisions. We need to do the finances and the numbers and also do the...
Mm-hmm. And then... All right, this is good. Good direction. And I do love good surveys.
Survey says.
Exactly. I don't know if that transponder is making its way around. Oh, good, it is.
Yeah.
Here's just a quick timeline of the feedback transponder. Again, the EasyPass group, the IAG, expect to finish testing in early 2013. We can overlap it a little bit and do our own testing. We would have to install the new readers. We'd have to establish our own processes and maybe some technology updates. But we think we might be able halfway through 2014 to start offering these.
If we're willing to integrate it with the existing system.
Correct.
The new, just
correct.
Waiting for the new system.
Correct.
So we probably need to do a little bit more of an assessment on the risks associated.
Right. This is the most optimistic scenario. Without a doubt. I don't know if there are any other questions or ideas about feedback transponders. That was helpful though, because you're right, we can refresh a lot of this information and bring the analysis. Okay. Then that brings us to the next order, where I can just kind of walk us through, I thought, where we are with the call center, because this has been an ongoing journey for all of us. And then we can probably move to the procurement items, would be my guess.
Great.
I think these bullet points look relatively familiar to people, at least the first set of them. The original customer service contract with Transcor, which has been in operation for a little more than 5 years at this point, had four major elements. One was image review, one was transponder fulfillment, meaning when people call in to have us mail out transponders, there's a group of people that needs to do that. Printing and mailing of all of our correspondence. We could send files of correspondence that somebody else needs to print and put in envelopes and stamps and send out. And then the big one, the call center. When you call our 1-800 number, somebody has to pick up the phone and somebody has to operate that call center. All of that has been with had been with Transcor for many years. When the board came to us and said, can you break it up? Can you make this a more competitive situation? And can you maybe even leverage the state use, the nonprofit entities that exist in Illinois? Can you bring these, and can you bring these these services internal to Illinois? Because at least one of them has been done externally in Texas. So we've been doing that for the past couple of years, and we've managed to break out image review a couple of years ago. They went to Bridgeway, and they've been
doing... They partner with Illinois Growth Enterprises.
They did partner with Illinois Growth Enterprises.
And now it's kind of become part of...
They've been doing image review in two places, in Rockford and in Galesburg. And that's been going pretty well. Transponder fulfillment went earlier this year to Ada McKinley on the south side of Chicago, and they have been working with us to get all of their processes up and running, and they're now doing all of the transponder fulfillment. Print and mail went to Printer's Mark, and that has also been going well. These are free state-use nonprofit organizations. Real question was how to deal with the call center, because it's so big, it's so complex, and it exists in the leased space that is not ideal. We've been trying to move to state-owned space, which is easier said than done, and all of this kind of came together and had to be executed together. So we think we're just about there. Call center plans. three very exciting bullet points for me, at least. We are commencing construction of the University of Illinois Chicago Call Center space. It's very exciting. They have procurements out on the UIC side to really do the design, but they've already begun the basic construction that they had already planned, covering up the floor that is there right now and putting in drop ceilings if needed. All of that stuff is underway.
So 18,000 square feet?
It's actually a little bit more. It's around 20,000 square feet. Yeah. So I think we've discussed before, it's a fantastic space for a number of reasons, but one of them is that it does give us the space that we would need if we were to ever need more call taker chairs. Right in Lyle right now, we're pretty crowded and there's no hope of expanding. So even as we do things like the Elgin O'Hare, we add whole new parts of the system. Call center volume presumably goes up when you do that, but we would not be able to expand in our existing space. That UIC space is going to be fantastic. We are here today to talk through the recommendation of a partnership with Chicago Lighthouse. That is a nonprofit organization that's based in Chicago. It is a state youth organization. They do call center work, and we would like to partner with them to do our call center work, which is a pretty big deal. I mean, it's a huge operation to partner with a nonprofit for, and we're excited about the possibility. And then we are recommending, and I'm going to talk through this on the next page here in a second, extending a couple of our existing contracts to cover the time frame for transition now that we finally have the space and the actual call center partnership ready to go. The timeline here shows that it will take until probably June to finish constructing the new call center space. And we're working with them every week and going to construction meetings every week to see what we can do to expedite it, but we have to be realistic too. They have to procure services, they've got to actually put people on the ground to do the work.
And they go through the same procurement process that we do.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
They do.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. We're optimistic. The second line there is we'll have to finalize the contract for the call center services. We're bringing it to you today for approval. Then, of course, there's all the normal signatures and whatnot that need to occur. After that, we need to operate the call center space from the existing location, and we need to, over time, operate it with a mix of our current vendor and our future vendor so that there can be seamless transition to the new space and the new organization. And that would happen during the first 6 months of next year. And that means that we would have to extend our relationship with Transcorp for call center services another 6 months, and we'll be talking about that as part of the procurement here. And we would have to extend the Lyle lease. We're staying for a whole year because of the complexities of lease procurement. So just in case the construction timeline doesn't hold. Because you can always put whoever you need to put in that lease space, but if the construction timeline doesn't hold, we're kind of stuck with that lease space. So we're bringing that for the course of a year. And the idea is all of this would allow us to do the transition and have uninterrupted customer service. And
but that year has, we have outs on that, right?
We do have outs. They're not, I don't think they're ideal. It would be a number of months before we could pull an out. But
there's a termination clause for the lease.
It is, but yeah.
30 days or 6 months?
No, it's not 6 months. I thought it was 30 days.
I thought that's what we're talking about.
I double-checked before I came up here. It's longer than 30 days. But there we could get out.
But there's enough planning time.
Yes.
So you're going to confirm for us the
yes.
timing, because
yes.
that was a question I know that was asked.
Yes.
So, but we don't anticipate that we're going to have any problem with knowing enough in advance to trigger the termination correctly.
Yeah, I would hope not. I don't want to, but I understand it's a major concern. Because if we are able to be out of the Lyle space entirely by June, we would want to terminate the contract early to save on this cost.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to. We don't want to be renting vacant space.
No. Sure.
Construction deadlines, which depend on state procurements, these are just some transition challenges. Training new staff, including lighthouse management. Never underestimate the need to train a whole group of new call center personnel. And then supporting significant business growth for nonprofit organizations. I mean, this is a huge lift for them, and we need to be there with them to make it happen. So it's these are our challenges, but I think we should be able to tackle them and move to new scenarios.
So what we're looking at, though, is it this transition. I mean, we would be looking at potentially operating partially with the existing vendor as we bring up to speed the new vendor, and potentially while we're utilizing different spaces at that time as we piecemeal move people in.
We need to work on a full transition plan, but that is a possibility that we would operate from two locations for a while. We will need to operate with a mix of the two vendors so that there is a transition that occurs, and presumably that mix would initially start in the Lyle location.
But
and if we had to, we could operate in two separate locations depending on how the construction design really does unfold.
And that, in essence, explains the overlapping between these three contracts that are on the agenda today.
Correct.
Because of that transition period in which we would have, you know, multiple vendors at, during the transition period and potentially multiple spaces.
But one thing that I would like to give credit to TransCore on is that they have been very cooperative with us in this whole effort, you know, as we're going through this transition, and have agreed to do everything they can to, you know, participate in any training or, you know, transition. They've just been really, really cooperative in trying to advance this agenda. And, you know, that's not something that you would always just expect to see from a vendor that, you know, in theory is losing, you know, some work that they've had in the past. So they've been great throughout this entire process and all these transitions. I know on image review they were helpful, and just in every way here. So we think that this is a very positive, positive thing. But it's it has taken some time, but I think we're hopefully going to get an excellent quality service and product at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think this is going to be very positive, and it's I think it's going to be really exciting in the tolling industry in general, because call centers are a huge part of electronic tolling.
Sure.
And to be able to do a partnership like this could really help lead some decision making in the industry at large. I don't know if we want to go to the procurement items before the last page of this. The last page is just an interoperability.
Yeah, I'm happy to give an update on that. As you all probably know, the Illinois Tollways represented on the boards and in leadership on a couple of tolling organizations, the International Bridge Tunnel and Turnpike Association, which is kind of the association for all the toll roads and agencies, certainly in the United States, but also internationally, as the name suggests. And then the IAG group as well, which is the, you know, interagency, interstate group for the EasyPass network. And with the passing of the most recent transportation bill, there was some language in the bill about interoperability for tolling, at least in the United States, and trying to promote some level of interoperability, or at least a plan for it by 2016. No mandate, and actually the previous transportation bill also mentioned something about interoperability for tolling. So clearly the federal government is interested in this. We, as both of those organizations, actually are picking up on this and really trying to work to come up with an industry solution on interoperability, because we know that it's a big challenge. I mean, the EasyPass group is certainly the largest group, interoperable group to date, and has a lot to have a lot of knowledge on the issue and have a lot to contribute to the conversation. But, you know, there are some states that have opted to maybe not be part of that EasyPass group, or who have adopted different types of technologies. And I think, you know, the feedback that we as an organization have tried to, based on previous conversations with the board that we have tried to advance in these national conversations, is, you know, we don't want to choose a winner in this. you know, we would like to, as much as possible, have, you know, open platforms and kind of make selections that allow for as many competitors in space as possible. So, you know, I think that that's one thing that I wanted to make sure that we all still, seems like that's certainly been the feedback from this committee and from the board and our organization generally, you know, that, you know, we'd like to try to pursue something that is not locking us in to anything long term if we can avoid it. But I wanted to make sure that I knew kind of what your thinking was on, to the extent you have any, on interoperability.
I think that, you know, the discussions that we've had as a committee and as a board as a whole, I mean, whether you're taking a look at the requirements and kind of the parameters we're taking on the RFP, or it's, you know, just the actions across the board, you know, I think that we've been pretty clear that we want to be open to, I think an open platform, as you described, is important for a multitude of reasons. Number one, to make sure that we can take advantage of technologies as they develop and as they become available. We're not locked into a certain vendor or a certain technology that may become antiquated in short order. Number two, and you know, we've heard this over and over and over, and we've said it, is, you know, we understand the charge that we have and the responsibility that we have to maximize the amount of competition when it comes to these vendors in order to maximize what we're getting for our customers. And, you know, with that being said, I can't, from my own perspective, say enough, for Director Towns as well, that, you know, that's the direction I want to see us going. And, you know, as strong as we can say that you know, I'm hoping that that's the way that, you know, you guys take us and understand that that's the focus of this board.
So that's certainly what we've been advancing, and Shauna participates in a lot of those types of conversations. Other people within, you know, business systems and tolling, I do. So that, you know, again, we're trying not to necessarily pick just one path, but something that leaves some flexibility for us. So, but did want to give you a little update on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice job. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Director, I'm sorry, Joe.
I have a question.
Yeah.
On the vendors for image review and others, what's the, I guess, the diversity numbers, right? In statistics, African-American, Hispanic?
The state use organizations have to file some of that information as part of the state use process with states on a regular basis. And we do ask them to provide some of that to us on a courtesy basis. So we could probably get those for you.
Okay, I want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Shauna, could you just do that and shoot it as a memo to the committee?
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you.
Great. All right. Moving on, and that puts us. Sorry, I buried my notes here. That moves us on under. Well. Do you have any other additional items?
I would like to just say a few words when we introduce item, I think, two. Wait.
I know it's kind of a,
yeah,
almost out of order.
So, but certainly we could take item one.
Okay. I will take a motion under Business Systems Contract Extension 06-0164, 6 months for the Consolidated Customer Service Center contract with TransCorp.
I move.
And second, is there any discussion? We've talked during Shauna's presentation a bit about this. Without any further questions, roll call.
Director Reddick?
Aye.
Director Towns?
Aye.
And that passes, and we'll go on to the full board a week from today. Moving on to item number two under Business Systems, contract award of 5 years with fire removal options for the Chicago Lighthouse contract, an amount not to exceed $61,500. Take a motion.
What's that number?
61.
Oh, it's here.
This is,
and we didn't have it in time or posting, but it could, I think, maybe on the agenda.
It's actually in the summary, it's 61.59.
Let's see.
61.5, so.
For the 5-year term, initial 5 years, right? So this again is the Chicago Lighthouse Partnership that we've been discussing, and, you know, we're thrilled, obviously, that this is kind of the fourth leg on the table, or fourth transition that we have out of that large contract to these state-used or not-for-profit partnerships. And we think that the Chicago Lighthouse will provide more than 200 jobs for members of underserved communities in Chicago when this is all said and done. And of course, I would emphasize, we have no reason to expect that the level of performance will not be just as good or better than what we have been receiving, but as with all of these partnerships, we'll keep you updated. And if for some reason we don't see that level of performance, we do have the ability to make a change if we have to, but we have every confidence that we're going to get great service here. And it's an organization that was founded in the early 1900s, 1906, so provide, you know, great services for some disadvantaged groups here in the northeast part of the state. So we're very excited about the partnership.
I think, did we get a motion? Did you make a motion on that?
I did.
Okay.
A little loud.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? Do you have any questions? Roll call, please.
Director Reddick?
Aye.
Director Towns?
Aye.
And that as well, we'll move on to full board next week. So in conjunction with those, as we've discussed, we have the third leg of this action here, which is the continuation of the one-year lease for the space in Lisle with the options to terminate, as we discussed, and we'll proceed with that, you know, depending upon the construction contract. So I would take a motion on the contract as submitted.
I move.
And second, is there any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Director Reddick?
Aye.
Director Towns?
Aye.
And that will move on to full board. Thank you very much. Moving on, is there any public comment? Marnie? Okay, we'll read about it tomorrow. Is there, seeing none, any unfinished business? Any new business? To the best of my knowledge, there's no executive session. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second, all those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, we stand in adjournment. Thank you very much.